When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast, where we are diving deep into Munger and Buffett and what everybody calls value investing, but which they say is just investing.
That's right.
Which I totally agree with them.
Everybody else is what, the fish that the gamblers are hooking? Is that right?
Everybody else is the fish that the gamblers are hooking.
Okay.
Yep.
Just making sure I've got my gambling analogy.
It's a really good point that all good investing is value investing. Essentially, you're not investing if you have risk that you're not going to get your money back. That's not investing. That's gambling.
Well, there's always some risk that you're not going to get your money back.
Sure.
But minimizing that as much as possible in terms of confidence in your own mind.
Well, yes. And the confidence in your own mind, I think, comes from an objective criteria rather than a subjective criteria.
Yeah.
That is, you have to be quite confident that you have estimated its future value to some degree, that mm-hmm. even if it's just it'll be more than today, that'll be fine for our purposes. And then you have a margin of safety on today's price. And we've talked about this endlessly, but it is the essence of investing that you're buying something cheaper than it's worth. That's it. Because that solves a lot of problems. And if you're not for sure you're doing that, if you're buying something because you hope somebody will buy it for more later, you're speculating and gambling. And of course, we see that a lot. And, you know, the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about what went on in the Buffett meeting where Charlie has been extremely outspoken about gambling and those who encourage it on their platforms, including Robinhood and Bitcoin as a couple of examples, notably waving a red flag in front of the bull, as Charlie says. So I thought today what we would do is go through some Munger quotes, like
yeah,
fast.
And on that, just because I'm going to forget if I don't say it now, I want to let everybody know that I'm sort of connected to like the great master's process here. I'm about to start reading all of the Buffett letters, Berkshire Hathaway letters from 1977 onwards as a general intensive investing practice. And I did this back when I first started learning to invest, back when we first started the podcast, mm-hmm. and I called it my investing intensive. Because mm-hmm. in yoga, you go and you do an intensive course. They call it a yoga intensive. So I called it my investing intensive to like be fancy.
Can I steal that name?
No, investing? You can't steal that. You have to say TM Danielle every time.
Intensive. I love that. Okay. TM Danielle.
Yes. It's in chapter 4 of Invested. I wrote about it. And I've been ever since I did that, which I really just did because at the time, like, I really didn't know what to do. And that was a thing that I thought, oh, well, these letters are here. And you had talked so much about how amazing they were. I was like, that's a thing I can do. I can read all of the letters. And I really didn't. I read 3 a day and it took me almost 2 weeks. And that was a lot. And I really didn't appreciate that much what was in them, which I kind of knew was going to happen. I was doing it to really get a sense of the language of investing, to understand what these guys were even talking about. And so a lot of it went over my head. And so ever since then, I've wanted to redo that experience and really like intensively go letter by letter and not really focus on anything else in my practice, but really just focus on the letters. So I'm going to start doing this again this week. I'm going to start this weekend and I'm going to write about it on my newsletter, The Invested Practice. So if you guys want to join, it's going to be awesome. Go join newsletter.danielletown.com and you'll get emails from me about my view of the letters. They'll be pretty short. It's all about us doing it together and having the experience of an intensive focus in these letters.
I think you should call this the investing newsletter a lot less intensive.
Oh, I love it.
You're going to be doing the intensive and everybody else is going to get to benefit from you doing all the work.
Well, they could. Yeah, they definitely could benefit
from me
doing.
And then maybe they'll actually go back and do all the work later.
Well, that is totally a viable option and I have no problem with that. Feel free to let me do all the work, see it, like what the result is and maybe go back and do it later. I don't care. It's everybody's practice. It's each our own practice and maybe it's a bad time to do it right now. And so you want to wait until like the summer or something. Fine, no problem. If you are a subscriber, if you're a member, you can go back and read on the archive anytime you want any of this stuff. So it's really about, for me, this feels like a good time. I'm sort of coming back. I'm starting to feel a bit better. I'm able to concentrate more in my investing practice. And I just really want to start right, start fresh, and start with the words of Buffett. So I'm not going to do it three times or three letters per day because that's too much for me right now. So I'm honoring my needs in my practice and I'm going to do roughly one per day. So it's going to take a bit longer. It's going to take like 7 weeks. But
oh my God, you really set yourself a high bar.
But it's one per day. So, I mean, one letter. They don't take that long to read, you know?
It's true.
So
but
it's
it is, and I will say too, it's a rite of, almost a rite of passage for all of the investors that I know that are really good investors have gone through this. They've like ultimately come back to the Buffett letters and said, oh yeah, I need to read all these.
It's a great point. So and every really single one, as I've been kind of dipping in and out over the last few months, every single one I've taken like three or four notes of just short things of like, this needs to go on my checklist, or this is something I need to make sure that I look back at later, or something like that. Like there's just these little gems that pop out. And I'm so excited to go through in chronological order and see what Buffett's mind was adding and changing and doing as we go through it. So I'm super excited about it. So go to newsletter.danielletown.com, the invested practice, you can Google it. And join me. It's going to be great.
Yeah, okay, be so cool. I'd suggest you all do that. All right.
You can
and
do
that
it
leads
too,
us
Dad.
Into,
you can join
I
me.
I would love to do this.
Intensive.
Of course, I'll do this. Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
I'll
You're
right
totally not. Okay. Love 100%. It. Love the intention.
Let's go right into Munger's quote because Munger's right off quotes. The bat, he's saying, hey, to get what you want, you have to deserve what you want.
Oh, I love it when he
yeah,
says that.
You got to do some work.
I love it when he says that.
You have to deserve it. He said, the world is not yet a crazy enough place to reward a whole bunch of undeserving people. I think Charlie must have done that quote about 10 or 20 years ago, because right now it feels like the world is crazy enough to reward a whole bunch of undeserving people. So we'll see. But in any case, have you got any comments on that one?
I think time frame matters in that context. And he has said that many times with a little addition, which is, in order to get the spouse you want, you have to deserve the spouse you want.
There you
and
go.
That's how I've always remembered it.
Next thing, the best is, thing a
oh
human
my God,
being
can I say
can
something
do.
Else about that?
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of spouses, because then I thought, oh, Charlie's been divorced at least once, I think. And he is one of the lawyers of record on the Bill Gates and Melinda Gates divorce, which is so weird.
Munger is? Really?
Yeah,
he doesn't even practice
he's
anymore.
Exactly. That's why it's so weird. He's listed as one of the three attorneys on record for Bill Gates. So, I don't know.
It might be that Gates and Munger have spent time together and he wants to make sure that everything they've spoken about is attorney-client privilege or something. I don't know.
That's
maybe
exactly.
Just hire him for that.
That's exactly the only reason that I can think of.
Yeah. Smart move.
But the strange thing is what that means is that Charlie Munger is still an active attorney with the court, which like why? It's all so weird.
Well, okay. Next quote.
Okay.
Because we got to do a lot of quotes.
Oh, we do?
Moving.
Oh, okay. We're moving.
Like 90 quotes or something. All right. Best thing a human can do is to help another human being know more.
Nice.
That's really awesome. Once Buffett was asked what he wanted his legacy to be, and he responded that he wanted to be known as a great teacher.
Yes.
Which is really awesome when you think about it. And it's one of the reasons I love what I do with all you guys, trying to educate you, doing this podcast, doing our trainings. I know Melissa feels the same way. I know Danielle feels the same way. It's like such a cool thing. Honestly, it really is. When you know you're, I just shot you a note the other day because you were feeling a little bit down, and I shot you a picture of you and I with the book Invested.
Yeah.
And said that, you know, I was really, this is one of the best things I've ever done in my life. Like a dream come true, doing a book with my daughter. And also that we've helped a lot of people figure out investing. It's really cool.
It is pretty cool. It's amazing. You know, this, we got a really nice email from Warren Buffett about our book. And I think he particularly responded to you writing about that intention of his, that you wanted to emulate him in teaching people, which I thought was really beautiful.
He's a really sweet gentleman, honestly. Yeah. All right. Next one is take a simple idea and take it seriously. This is kind of the idea.
I don't know what to think about that.
It's like the idea of do one thing and go deep. It follows through the entire investing practice that we teach, honest to God. You'll notice it after a while. You just look at it and go, yeah, that's what we're doing. Like initially, the biggest problem that people have when they try to start investing is they try to do too much. They go too broad and they need to focus down very, very narrowly and then get really deep in that one thing.
Say the quote again.
Take a simple idea and take it seriously.
Okay. Take a simple idea and take it seriously. So I think then obviously it depends a lot on what the simple idea is, but I get what you're saying.
He's driving at
something without complicating it too much.
Yeah.
By the way,
they've done.
That makes me think of that amazing book, The One Thing. Oh my God. If you haven't read that book, like run, don't walk.
Really?
The One Thing. You don't even need to read the book. I'll tell you what the one thing is. The one thing is decide what the one most important thing in your life is and do that and make sure that it happens. I think he recommends every day, but basically like on a very regular basis. And don't let other stuff get in the way of the one thing, because most of the time, the one thing is something that is important but not urgent. And so we tend to be forced, really, like none of us want it, but we tend to be forced to choose the urgent stuff because they have to get done. And then the important stuff, of which the one thing is the most important, gets pushed down. And so the point of the book is, make sure you prioritize that one thing. And then the whole book is about how to do that, which is worth reading.
Well, I'm buying it right now.
Yeah, it's excellent. I'm signing in. It's excellent.
I'm signing in. I think that's a great, great idea. I just remember that movie with Billy Crystal and they had the guy Curly on his horse out at the dude ranch. And
City Slickers.
Secret of life. Yeah, City Slickers.
That's
he holds
such
up
a good
his
movie.
Finger. Is that Jack Palance who did that?
Yeah.
Like this crusty Jack Palance. One thing. That was really cool.
And he goes, what's the one thing?
And these city guys are like, what?
What's the one thing?
All right, next quote. Like Warren, I had considerable passion to get rich, not because I wanted Ferraris. I wanted independence. I desperately wanted it.
That's cool. Man.
Yeah, right on. All right.
Of people miss about Munger is that he was an incredibly successful lawyer. Incredibly successful. His law firm, Munger Tolles, is one of the top law firms in the country, and that is no easy feat. I mean, the legacy has in law is not so much of him as like winning certain cases or something like that, but as a business person in law, creating a law firm like that, it's just unbelievable. And nobody ever talks about that.
I'll tell you another Charlie trivia.
Sure.
Is that his first investments in when he started getting going on having enough money to invest were terrible and he lost money.
How do you know that?
He talks about it.
He does?
One of his books, yeah.
I don't know if I've ever read about that.
So he Well, essentially,
I love hearing failure stories.
It's like starting to realize that you have to buy wonderful assets, not just assets that are cheap.
Oh, so he was doing the same as Buffett, basically, the cigar butt.
But he was doing it with real estate, and it screwed up badly. Right? So anyway, just a thought. This quote right here is huge. The big money is not in the buying and the selling, but in the waiting.
Yeah.
That one is so important, you guys, because it's hard to understand it until you do what we do. Because you obviously think, well, you know, obviously we talk about a margin of safety, so the buying is important, and we talk about, you know, holding it forever, so the selling's important. Here's Charlie saying that that's not where you make your money. You make your money when you're not doing anything. You make your money waiting.
I have to say I struggle with that one. And I think it's correct. For me, it has to be coupled with, I don't know what the exact quote is, but another thing that he said, which is essentially you have to wait. And then as soon as the opportunity arises, you strike.
Yes.
And
calls it being passive aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
We're extremely passive until we get extremely aggressive. And yes. That's the idea of
you
have
wait, to
you
have
wait, and then
both.
You load up the truck.
You have to have both. And I think, you know, there's so many, at least this is my like outside view, there's so many financial-ish people who have to be told to wait because their whole thing is like they're much more of the gambler type. They're much more of the like, let me do stuff. And so, I am one of the people who is a natural waiter and I'm so risk averse that I'm like not somebody who's good at striking when it's the right time. So I have to hear both of those things or else I would just wait forever.
Well, the waiting is on both sides, actually. So I think this is important to understand that the big money is not in the buying, it's in the waiting until buying. And the big money is not in the selling, it's the waiting while you own it. It's essentially one of the real problems I've had in my career is selling too soon and not just staying on. I mean, the classic, of course, is Chipotle, which has been on this broadcast multiple times, which is now at something like $1,500 a share. When I got out, just under $500 after doubling my position. It was one of the classic errors I've made in my investing career on that particular company. And this is not a company I don't know well. I know it extremely well. I just misunderstood what this market's doing.
Yeah.
Right? And on hindsight, of course, it's pretty clear. But I looked at this thing and thought, you know, this is worth $500 to $600 a share to a reasonable person. I didn't see it's worth $1,500 a share. But Charlie's point is never underestimate the power of the market to be irrational, particularly when it goes up. And you just sit there. And you'll do much better than trying to be super clever. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. The just one more point on this. The portfolio that our students put together in Singapore, which is now 12 years ago, almost 13 years ago, 2009. What is that? That's 11 years ago. Sorry. They put a portfolio together of 10 companies. And this is something we do in every three-day class. But at that particular three-day class, the market had bottomed, and they nailed it. And that portfolio, since it was our first class, I've been tracking it the whole time. That portfolio has managed to do, as of 2018, the markets continued to go up. It was doing 32% per year compounded and had a 1,250% return so far in it. Now, this is a paper portfolio, right? This was, now, if they invested in it, great. They made that money. But the whole key was just sit there and do nothing and let the market take care of you.
All you have to do is buy at the lowest point and then wait.
It was classically lucky, no doubt about it. Well, not entirely. I mean, I was very public right then saying, you know, we're loading up the truck. Here it is. I don't know where the bottom is, but this is bottomy enough.
Yeah.
After 18 months to just get going on it. So,
well, you know, I think what your students would learn and probably all of us need to learn is the those dips, the peaks and the valleys, they look like they don't matter so much over a very long period of time, you know, 30 to 40 years of investing. And when you're like going through it, like right now, and you have Warren Buffett putting out letters saying it's about to start raining gold, so make sure you're ready. It's, I think, you know, I've been through it now, but I'd never been through it before. And I think that's a really big challenge to say, like, okay, I'm going to sit here and watch everything I own drop when I could have done something about it and been ready to buy when everything went down. So I don't think that the, like, I feel like decision making is the important thing to review, not so much the result matters to determine if your decision making was flawed or not. And so was the decision making flawed? And I think it was, in terms of, like, for me, I wasn't thinking of the right time frame. I should have been thinking much longer and just go through those valleys.
Well, that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the point. That's what
that's
I'm saying.
The whole point. So
the decision making when it comes to this thing of, like, it seems like the market's going to drop, so I'm going to do something, like, that's where the error came for me.
Yeah. And basically, we don't do something because we think the market's going to drop. We do something because we think the market's going to drop and we've got a bunch of stuff that's overpriced. Then I'll do something.
How are those things different? Oh, well, I guess the market could drop.
Pretty damn different.
I guess the market could drop without things being over. I've never been in a situation as an investor where the market wasn't really overpriced. So, yeah, that's...
Well, we're in a situation right now where I have companies that are not overpriced. And I think the market could drop, and I hope it does. And I'm not selling any of those things. I'm buying more if they go down, right? But I have exited positions that I've already, you know, thought have arrived at intrinsic value or higher in anticipation of needing cash to take advantage of things.
Yeah.
So that you have to...
Like, it's not illogical.
There. Uh-uh.
It's logical.
And but you have to be okay with sitting in cash for 3 years because that can happen. In fact, Buffett talked about that at the meeting, didn't he? Or did I just read that somewhere else? It's just saying that he's perfectly content to... No, it wasn't the meeting. It was the...
No, I don't remember it.
No, it wasn't. It was in his first TV interview that a friend just sent me in 1981 or 79, something like that. And he basically said, you know... The guy was asking, well, how do you have money? I mean, the standard convention is to stay invested. And this is, of course, what a lot of value investors do. Guy Spear stays invested.
Well, I mean, this is literally what we're talking about, staying invested.
Right, staying invested. But Warren doesn't stay invested. Absolutely not. He absolutely gets out on multiple occasions in my experience around him is that he is out. I'll tell you what, he's really good at it. And they talk about, we don't do any of that. But that is absolutely not true. He was talking in 1981 about on this TV interview that he'll go to cash and he'll stay in it sometimes for a few months, sometimes as much as 2 years in cash. And I can tell you right now, he's been in more or less in cash now for 4 years, almost 4 years.
Well, I mean,
Charlie Munger bought his first stock in 4 years of in the last quarter. So... Yeah,
but I mean, to accurately reflect the record, yes, he does some of that, but mostly he sticks with the same companies over 15, 20, 30 years.
Well, let's be clear. He has his portfolio.
Yeah.
And then he has cash flow coming in. I wrote about this in Payback Time. This thing I called a Berkey. It's basically Berkshire Hathaway is a cash generating machine. That's what it does. It generates an enormous amount of free cash flow, which Buffett is then has to allocate as the CEO of Berkshire. So if he does nothing, cash starts to stack up. And I kind of want that for you guys, too. It's certainly the case that if you have a job and you don't spend frivolously, you live on less than what you make and pay attention to putting away about 10% of what you make off the top, like paying yourself first, which is a great practice, then you end up with a growing pile of capital to allocate, which means you can hold on to companies and then you have money to allocate to invest in them again if they go down. So, Buffett's been holding Coca-Cola forever and American Express forever and all these things forever, but he still has $145 billion sitting there in cash that he has to allocate, and he's not allocating it. So
right.
that's the key.
So I think that's a great point, that the new cash coming in that's coming off of the businesses is new money that he gets to either invest or keep or whatever. But wouldn't you say that that's different than selling shares?
Yeah, but he sells shares all the time. I mean, I remember watching Buffett back in the 80s and 90s, and he would unload entire positions, right? I mean, look at what come on. I mean, we know he does it. He unloaded all of his IBM
positions.
Well,
this is what I'm excited to check as I go through the letter.
Check it out. Look at what he did with the IBM. As soon as a company starts performing substantially, in other words, as soon as the story changes on a company from what he thought, he's out of there. Look what he did on all the airlines.
That's true. Absolutely.
Gone.
Absolutely. I have learned so much from him of how quickly he changes after he decided that he made a mistake, or the story has changed, or there's something he didn't realize.
It's the story's changed, and that's the.
But
that's
he doesn't wait around.
No.
Like,
time to go.
He makes the decision, and it's done.
That's a really good thing to learn. I'm telling you, we've done that. The most recent example is a company called Chicago Bridge and Iron, which has since gone in and been almost went into bankruptcy and was acquired. Famous old 100-year-old construction company, and the CEO of the company was making, on hindsight, horrible decisions in the things he was acquiring. This is a great example of a guy who was acquiring things to make his company bigger, because that made him bigger. He got bigger money as a result of making his company bigger. Wasn't making it better, he was making it worse. Yeah. And all the decisions he made were taking it down. And somewhere in the process, Buffett had acquired Chicago Bridge and Iron and then seen what this guy was doing and exited. And it took me out of it too. I saw Buffett exit and I started thinking, okay, let's go deeper here. And realized this guy was making bad acquisitions that were in trouble, and we exited.
Yeah.
So
still a different situation than a company you really like that really hasn't changed, and you just think that the stock is way over its intrinsic value.
And Buffett will sell those too. I mean, not anymore because he's too big.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about, because I bet he did used to do that
back when
it wasn't international news when he sold something.
I think we talked about this a little bit, or maybe I just wrote about it. I don't remember. But basically back I think he wrote a letter in 1962 or something where he basically said, we do three different kinds of investments, and our long-term investments, he called generals, our long investments are ones where we will buy it at a big margin of safety price, and then we'll sell it at the private company price, which is where I'm a buyer. I'm a buyer at the private company price.
Yeah, we did talk about that.
And so Buffett is basically saying back in those days, he was buying so cheap that he could sell at about half of what the public value might be someday. And so he was still picking up stuff in the late 50s that was sort of depression era looking triple net kinds of things, or net sorts of purchases where he was buying them for the cash on the books minus the liabilities. So he's not doing that anymore. And he talked about not being able to get out of Coca-Cola when it was running about $90 a share. He just was like very forthcoming, saying, I'm not nimble. I'm not nimble. And so
They refer to that all the time. Oh, what we would be buying if we were smaller. Oh, what we would be doing if we were smaller. You know, with our amount of money, we just can't do that deal. You know, that kind of stuff.
Buffett has literally said that he would be making 50% a year if he had just a million-dollar portfolio. And since he's super, super smart, and, you know, we're making less than half of that, that probably reflects that I'm less than half as smart. So if he's got 160 IQ, that puts me at about an 80. But I'm still doing okay, which tells you the next quote. Watch this segue.
Okay.
Here's Charlie's next quote. You don't have to be brilliant, only a little bit wiser than the other guys on average for a long time.
Oh, geez.
Like
that sounds
that one.
Daunting.
Oh, a little bit wiser.
Wiser that means just for a long period of time.
It means it's going to work out to make you wealthy, but you've got to start doing this now, and you just keep doing it, and you'll be wealthy. And this also parallels a Buffett quote that Warren was basically saying, it would make a lot of sense if you just got a punch card with 20 potential punches in it, like from Subway or something. It's got 20 possible punches in it for your entire lifetime. Those are all of the companies you're allowed to buy. And when you're done with the 20th punch, you can't buy any more companies. He said it would slow you down and it would cause you to make a lot more careful purchases. He said, if all you did was get four of those right, you'll be very rich.
True. True.
Four out of 20.
And don't sell, right?
Right. You just buy them and hold
Wait.
Them. Yeah. They'll eventually be companies that will compound money at amazing prices. So, yeah, that's the hard part is holding on to my part.
I like doing short Munger quotes.
Oh, Let's these are
fun. Do some more next time.
He says, you don't, here's oh, another one
or
on that
another
same
one
thing.
Now. Okay, last one.
Last one. Same idea. You don't have to have the kind of ability that quantum mechanics requires. You just have to know a few simple things and really know them. And this is great because this is what we've been teaching you guys for 5 years. A few simple things and really know them are what we're doing on this podcast once a week. A few simple things and diving deep into them. So right on to that. All right. We'll come back to Charlie. These are fun. I like doing these.
I like the short version. Yeah, it's fun.
All right. We'll do some
more. All right. Okay.
Until then, time to play. See you guys.
Thanks, everybody. Bye. Come join me on the letters. Bye.
Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important. It's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.